Michael has entitled his sermon on Habakkuk, or rather his study on Habakkuk, "The Righteous Will Live by His Faith." The book of Habakkuk begins with Habakkuk's prayer in chapter 1, verses 1 through 11. For some time, the prayers of this faithful man of God had, from all indication, fallen on deaf ears. He was weary, confused, and perhaps a bit heartsick. He had long before grown accustomed to the ungodliness of men. But he could not fathom the growing injustice among God's own people. Time and again, the prophet expressed his frustration to God. "How long, O Lord, will I call for help, and thou wilt not hear? I cry out to thee, violence, yet thou dost not save. Why dost thou make me see iniquity and cause me to look on wickedness? Yes, destruction and violence are before me. Strife exists and contention arises. Therefore, the law is ignored and justice is never upheld. For the wicked surround the righteous, therefore justice comes out perverted." Certainly you and I appreciate the prophet Habakkuk's prayer. We can relate to the circumstances which compelled his cry, and we can honor him for the passion of his heart. Habakkuk's most felt need was not an elusive quest for selfish gratification. His prayer, the object of his passion, was for the honor of God and the defense of his law among his people. From Habakkuk, we learn that we may legitimately express our frustration, our doubt to our God in prayer, but may we ever be careful to question the legitimacy of our frustration. Although God had chosen not to previously reply to Habakkuk's prayer, this day was the prophet's lucky day. God responded to the prophet with remarkable eagerness. Have you ever longed to share a bit of good news with another, and yet for some reason been forced to wait? Perhaps you've just waited for the right question to give you the opportunity. When finally the opportunity came, the news broke from your lips before they could part. In similar fashion, God broke his silence with Habakkuk, and his words betrayed his enthusiasm for his anticipated response to the growing injustice among his people. In verse 5 it reads, "Look among the nations, observe, be astonished, wonder, because I am doing something in your days you would not believe if you were told. For behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans, that fierce and impetuous people who march throughout the earth to seize dwelling places which are not theirs. They are dreaded and feared. Their justice and authority originate with themselves. Their horses are swifter than leopards and keener than wolves in the evening. Their horsemen come galloping. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle swooping down to devour. All of them come for violence. Their horde of faces moves forward. They collect captives like sand. They mock at kings, and rulers are a laughing matter to them. They laugh at every fortress and heap up rubble to capture it. Then they will sweep through like the wind and pass on. But they will be held guilty, they whose strength is their God." God planned to send the Chaldeans, or the Babylonians, to subjugate the people of Judah. Poor Habakkuk. He only thought that he was confused when he uttered his previous prayer. Following God's ambitious reply, he became the victim of a TMI, too much information. Indeed, perhaps the greatest object of our fears, the inability to see the future, is God's greatest mercy. At once, the prophet left his post as chief advocate for the prosecution and jumped on the defense of Judah. And when he did, and this is significant to Habakkuk's story, his prayer on behalf of the honor of God and the defense of his law became a prayer absorbed in self-centered concern. And predictably, his faith was consumed by fear. Now let us look at Habakkuk's rebuttal, beginning in chapter 1, verse 12. Before we reproach Habakkuk for his fearful and rather coarse rebuttal to God, we pause to observe a wonderful lesson from the prophet's faith. Even as it struggled against his fear, in fact, the book of Habakkuk, written just prior to the Babylonian captivity of 606 BC, is a wonderful book of instruction for all who would today walk by faith, not by sight. 2 Corinthians 5 and 7. It is not suited for the novice. Instead, it is best directed to the mature, self-assured man who, like Habakkuk, believes he knows what it is to walk by faith. As Habakkuk approached God, notice his initial words. Art thou not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? We will not die. Thou, O Lord, hast appointed them, the Chaldeans, to judge, and thou, O Rock, hast established them to correct. Thine eyes are too pure to approve evil, and thou canst look on wickedness with favor. The troubled prophet began his prayer neither by questioning God's wisdom nor by making supplication. Instead, Habakkuk first affirmed in prayer what he knew about God: his power, his character, his faithfulness. What a magnificent lesson in faith. Faith in trial does not demand blind assumption. It is rather an extension of our knowledge. And Habakkuk, when faced with the situation which he could not understand, reflected first upon those truths about God of which he was certain. Too often, when we are faced with a similar dilemma, we tend to concentrate on those aspects of our trial which we do not understand. We allow the moment to overcome our faith in God. Like Habakkuk, we need to back up from the trial and stand upon the solid ground of our knowledge. The Apostle Paul, well acquainted with Habakkuk's experience, understood that the strength of a man's faith rests upon the depth of his knowledge of God's word. Romans 10 and 17. Only after affirming his trust in God's power, wisdom, and faithfulness did Habakkuk question God's intention to use the Chaldeans to discipline the nation of Judah, beginning in verse 13. With favor on those who deal treacherously, why art thou silent when the wicked swallow up those more righteous than they? Why hast thou made men like the fish of the sea, like creeping things without a ruler over them? The Chaldeans bring all of them up with a hook, drag them away with their nets, and gather them together in their fishing nets. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they offer a sacrifice to their net and burn incense to their fishing net, because through these things their catch is large and their food is plentiful. Will they therefore empty their nets and continually slay nations without sparing? As you can see, Habakkuk's knowledge of God did not eliminate either the actual trial or his initial fear, but it did give him the confidence in God, which he expressed at the conclusion of his rebuttal in the first verse of the second chapter. I will stand on my guard post and station myself on the rampart, and I will keep watch to see what he will speak to me and how I may reply when I am reproved or rebuked. Such admirable humility. Habakkuk affirmed what he knew about God, gave voice to the fear that gripped his spirit, and concluded with the anticipation of the Lord's rebuke. His faith was mature enough to understand that any apprehension of God's wisdom was to his own reproach and not to God's. In verse 2, he says, Then the Lord answered me and said, record the vision and inscribe it on the tablets, that the one who reads it may run. For the vision is yet for the appointed time. It hastens toward the goal, and it will not fail. Though it tarries, wait for it will certainly come. It will not delay. Behold, as for the proud one, His soul is not right within him, but the righteous will live by his faith. After first reaffirming the inevitability of the Chaldeans' conquest, God did not disappoint Habakkuk's expectation of rebuke. Behold, as for the proud one, his soul is not right within him, but the righteous will live by his faith. Michael goes on to say, when I was a younger man, my walk of faith often led to disappointment and despair. I can recall daily analyzing my life, struggling to find God's purpose in my trials. Seemingly, each time I found the answer. Within days, I found a flaw in my reasoning. Something else happened to make a mockery of my deductions. With wisdom, a brother has admonished, beware the interpreter of God's providence. All the while, confident I was walking by faith, in reality, I was walking by sight. A man of faith does not attempt to understand the rationale behind every difficult trial, but knowing God's character, chooses to trust him and to submit to his revealed will. The remainder of chapter 2 is an expansion of what God promised Habakkuk of the Chaldeans in verse 11 of chapter 1. But they will be held guilty, they whose strength is their God. The Chaldeans' own injustice would not go unpunished. Habakkuk, however, in his fear, didn't hear. We go on with chapter 13, and we look into Habakkuk's determination. With tender resignation and a determined spirit, Habakkuk prayed once more. Lord, I have heard the report about thee, and I fear. It's a tragic misperception that faith always dispels fear. While many allow fear to hinder courageous works of faith, the great men of God, like Habakkuk, press on in spite of fear. How did Habakkuk press on in spite of his fear? First, he submitted himself to God's will. Habakkuk chapter 3, verse 2. O Lord, revive thy work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known. Habakkuk neither prayed for deliverance nor elimination of the trial. He prayed instead for God's will to be done. Fear has its origins in self-centered concern. To dispel fear, hold tightly to the work. With this prayer, revive thy work, Habakkuk returned to the spirit of his initial prayer. And yet, so tender is this, yet fearful he adds, in wrath, remember mercy. Second, Habakkuk rehearsed God's faithfulness in verses 3 through 15. The prophet forced himself to recall the faithfulness and power of God in the deliverance of his people, reminding ourselves of God's abiding care in the past gives us the courage to face present trials. Perhaps this is one reason Paul encouraged the Philippians, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. Philippians 4 and 6. Third, Habakkuk made the decision to forge ahead, trusting in God in spite of his fear. I envy those of you who are about to hear the final words of Habakkuk for the first time. They're among the most beautiful of all inspired literature. Their beauty rests not merely in the words, but in the profound depth of faith that they convey to the reader. Verse 16, I heard and my inward parts trembled. At the sound, my lips quivered. Decay enters my bones, and in my place I tremble, because I must wait quietly for the day of distress, for the people to arise who will invade us. Have you ever been frightened? Have you ever been so frightened that your lips quiver, Your bones trembled. I have. And so was Habakkuk. Imagine, if you will, that you are Habakkuk. A fierce and impetuous people are poised at your borders, and God has given you into their hands. Yet, in spite of this fear, listen to the determination of the prophet. Though the fig trees should not blossom, and there be no fruit on the vines, though the yield of the olive should fail, and the fields produce no food, though the flock should be cut off from the fold, and there be no cattle in the stalls. In other words, in spite of any personal implications, even if the world about him were about to crumble, Habakkuk declared, "Yet I will exult in the Lord. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. The Lord is my strength, and he has made my feet like hinds' feet, the feet of swift antelopes, and makes me walk on my high places, places of greatest fear." Habakkuk's resolve echoes Job's similar declaration in Job chapter 13 and 15. Chapter 13, verse 15. "Though he slay me, I will hope in him." May we determine today to become men and women of faith like Habakkuk, occasionally fearful, but always faithful, content to rejoice, if for no other reason than in the God of our salvation.